The boss yells at the man goes home, he yells at his wife, the wife yells at the child goes and yells at the cat. I think we all are very familiar with this idea. I knew about that growing up when I was like in middle school in the 90s. Like, and now as an adult, I'm like, oh yeah, that's absolutely the norm. That should not be the norm. And that speaks to the level of power and presence our institutions hold, our organizations and workplace hold in creating the culture and the norms for our larger society. The Workwell Studio is a relatively new organization. It's very exciting. The work that we do is that we believe and are committed to workspaces that are founded in equity and justice principles. That is what we aim to do. And we look to build and sustain individual and collective development and well-being by addressing these inequitable systems.
The Perspective View podcast by CC America LLC is a show dedicated to discussing diversity, culture, and context beyond the boardroom. DEI today is more than a buzzword on a billboard. It is creating safe spaces for varying perspectives, ideas, and experiences without fear of being canceled because you don't conform. Let's tear down the walls together and build a new foundation with an open mind and understanding that the world revolves around the context of perspective. Hello, and welcome to another live taping of the Perspective View podcast. I am your host, Tamiria Jordan, and I am thrilled to be joined by Makella Auld. She is going to share with you all tonight how she fosters innovative organizations that prioritize the holistic well-being of employees. We are going to talk about her personal journey and her role as the founder and chief executive coach at the Workwell Studio. We will talk about her work in building justice-oriented work cultures and her commitment to reducing barriers to access and success for all employees. And I have had the pleasure of working directly with Makella and look forward to her sharing all of the great work she is doing. So welcome to the show, Makella.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here and have this conversation with you.
You're welcome. So before we get started, I would love for you to tell our listeners who you are in your own words. So when you think about an elevator pitch, who would you say Makella is?
That's a great question. So I think most simply, I believe in the priority of individual and collective well-being, and I'm committed to reducing barriers to access and success in these ways. My purpose is to contribute to the solutions that produce and sustain equitable outcomes that are grounded in human-centered approaches to building just work cultures, like you said. I've supported individuals and communities at the school levels, district levels, university level, city, state, and national levels. And across the various levels of work that I've done, my priority has been, how do we integrate a mindset and a culture of well-being into the work that we do?
I love that. And I love the title of the Workwell Studio. So I look forward to really getting into that a little bit more. So speaking of which, can you tell us more about your background and the various roles that you've held as a behavioral change leader and executive coach?
Yeah. So my undergrad is sociology and anthropology. So my foundation is very much, how do we deconstruct norms and systems and practices and behaviors across cultures and really get in and dissect where they come from and what they're based in and understand how that is informing, you know, our current society, informing our past society, and then perpetuating these same ideals onto the future and what that looks like, and really getting in and understanding, you know, I think the idea for me that I've spent a lot of time talking with organizations around is, there's an idea in sociology considered pro-social institutions, and we consider education a pro-social institution, and in a lot of ways it is, but we've really seen, especially over the last few years, how education can contribute to sustaining harmful, damaging, traumatic experiences for many individuals and communities across our country. And this isn't just a U.S.-specific issue, but most of my work is U.S.-based, so I'll stick there. And so I think when it comes to behavior change, a lot of my work has really been at more of the culture level of an institution, a culture level of a team, or a culture level of, you know, a larger, just like education as a field. So I got my start in education, K-12 in the university system, looking at innovative practices within education that reformed and reframed who has the power in education, who are the decision makers, where are we putting our dollars, how are we aligning our services and systems, who are we centering in those decisions. And so from very early on, a lot of my work was very community-based, very much driven by the communities that we are working in, that I find myself in on a day-to-day basis. But then over time, I was able to move into spaces where my scope looked at systems and procedures at a city level, at a state level, building out coalitions and networks, and working at things at the national level. And what I saw was they all had a very common thread of how do we integrate, you know, the passions that each team brings to the table with like the community, why that this work is so necessary. So how are we bringing, you know, the organization and those that the organization is claiming to serve together to have a shared vision and a shared why? And that's really difficult work if we don't have clear understandings of what, you know, what needs to be the shared priority, and building consensus and coming to, you know, the grounding place where we're all in this together kind of thing. And that requires a great deal of equity work, a great deal of justice work. And I hope that as we have this conversation today, it requires a great deal of wellness and well-being work, which I'll talk about a little bit more, I think, later on. But it, that's not what we usually think of in the U.S. I'm not talking about like, let's go get our yoga on, or like you need to get some bath bombs for a bath. Talking about like integrated, holistic, whole human, whole community well-being. Which really wraps in a lot of equity, a lot of anti-racist foundations. And so, yeah, that's really what I've been up to and where I've been and where I'm going.
I love that. And I love that you said reframe and reform and really bringing individuals together. And that was actually one of the very first presentations I saw, was regarding the work that you had been doing in terms of bringing individuals together in their collective experiences. So speaking of which, that leads me to the second question. How does your experience in collective well-being research inform your approach to coaching leaders and also helping develop innovative organizations?
Yeah, that's a great question. I sometimes feel very honestly, like I don't get to use the word innovation in my work, because as a society, we think about innovation so much around tech, and especially with where our like societal conversation is right now, we think around like AI and all of those things. But innovation work is really anything that is stretching, pushing, you know, reorganizing, reimagining, recentering, you know, different spaces, people, ideas, concepts in different ways than they have before. And so when we're thinking about organizational culture, especially at a time where we find, you know, ourselves in a very pivotal moment in most organizations across this country with how do we move forward, a lot of my work is really innovative, because it pushes people to think beyond what we usually know and what we usually do. I think, so I'm working on a presentation, and one of the ways that I've decided to try to like capture this idea is there was a, like one of the first memes that came out, I think it was 1964. It was like a comic strip at the time. It was the anger transference one, where the boss yells at the employee. The employee is a man in this situation. It's the 60s, unfortunately. Sorry. But the boss yells at the man. The man goes home. He yells at his wife. The wife yells at the child. The child goes and yells at the cat. I think we all are very familiar with this idea. I didn't realize that originated in the 60s. I knew about that growing up when I was like in middle school in the 90s. Like that was integrated into me. And now as an adult, I'm like, oh yeah, that's absolutely the norm. Why is that
so true?
That should not be the norm. And that speaks to the level of power and presence our institutions hold, our organizations and workplace hold in creating the culture and the norms for our larger society. And so from that lens, I think I've really been able to help teams and organizations push themselves to think about things from a wellness perspective, a well-being perspective of if we're creating that much anger, frustration, pain, harm, maybe even depending on how it's done, actual trauma in the body of a human in the workplace, that continues to carry with them throughout the rest of their day and the rest of their life. It impacts their relationships. It impacts their self-worth and their view of themselves. It impacts how they may choose to raise their children if they have children. And that's really powerful. So what does it look like if we change how we set our culture, how we set our norms, how we set our practices, how we train our staff, what we choose to train our staff and leaders in? Are we choosing to overlook the social emotional development? Are we choosing to overlook the anti-racist workshop because it might be too uncomfortable for some folks? We are doing a disservice to our organization, ourselves, and our larger culture. So I try to bring that mindset to the work that I do.
I love that. And I think that's a great example. And to your point of where we are as a society, we do have the ability to impact so much. And so that is really the premise of the perspective view. So thank you for sharing that perspective. And that actually leads me to the next question, which is, could you elaborate more on the concept of a whole person? Because I think this was a great segue in your response. As it relates to employee well-being and the impact on organizational success, because I think that great segue of looking at how it may impact us at home, but also the impact on the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I spent a few years at Loyola University, right before and through the biggest, like most foundationally impactful, I think for most of us anyways, component of the pandemic. And while I was there, I was on a team that was working on research, really getting in and digging into why, and the project started very youth focused. It was a project we were working on for our School of Education at the university. And we were working with a department that spent most of its time external facing in the Chicago Public School District. And so we were working with that team to really figure out why what is called social emotional learning in the schools, why social emotional learning was not being successful in a lot of schools. Was it the curriculum? Was it the implementation? Like what was happening? Why wasn't this working the way that everybody was saying it should be working? And that foundation quickly took on a life of its own. The project ended up being a community-based project focused on the whole life cycle of the human. It was not just focused on youth. It ended up being cradle to grave kind of thing, really thinking through how are we developing socially and emotionally as humans in this society, in this culture. And what we were finding in the research that we were doing was most of the time when we were thinking about social emotional development, we were lacking a very critical integration points. And two of the biggest ones being trauma-informed care and anti-racist practices. A lot of, just like everything else in our country, a lot of our social emotional capacity building, development, learning, whatever the keywords are in your sector, were based off of research in the late 80s, early 90s that were focused specifically on your white middle class. And there was no integration into what does social emotional development look like if you are an individual or a community that has experienced trauma in the home, generationally, systemically, no attention to that. And then also no look at what does this look like from an anti-racist lens? What does it look like when we look at what social emotional development looks like here in a very independent Western society versus, and what does social emotional development look like for a family that migrated from a very communal based, community or culture and country? Like there's none of that. It's very stale from all of those mixed realities. And so when I moved on from Loyola. I was fortunate to be able to take this work with me and develop what we call at the Workwell Studio a practice of care framework, which really looks at how we integrate all three of those things within our organization. Because frankly, we spend a lot of time having social emotional conversations with youth, and we don't with adults. And it shows up in our workplaces and how we handle conflict and how we do resolution and how we do, you know, restoration and, you know, the microaggressions that show up every day and the way we just like allow that to like roll off our back and move on and act like it didn't just hurt us. And those things really need to show up in the workspace if we're going to be able to push things forward. So that is one piece of it. The other piece is something that's called the 8 dimensions of wellness, which is a framework that really looks at the intersection and the necessity of focusing on 8 different dimensions of your well-being: your social, cultural, physical, your career, occupational, spiritual, intellectual, financial, environmental, and your emotional, mental. And so oftentimes we don't like have the capacity to do that. We're not taught how to do that. We don't talk about that. But man, our workplace hits every single one of those. It needs to have a space in how we develop, you know, our strategic plans and how we develop our frameworks in, you know, our HR practices and the way we, you know, design all of these different things that interact with our workforces. So we spend a lot of time having those conversations.
I think that's great. And I think you hit the nail on the head with regard to what you're doing. And I love the fact that you mentioned the social emotional learning, because individuals would almost make you feel bad for bringing up emotions in the workplace. But I love how you said it. You said a mixed reality, because that is exactly what we see every day, is that people are coming in with their own realities, their own experiences. And we're all in a mixing pot, almost like a big melting bowl of all of these different experiences, ideas, and thoughts. And so when you think about that and the work that you do, how do you support companies in fostering that learning-focused environment where individuals do feel like their well-being is prioritized?
Yeah. I think there are so many things. And I will answer this from the lens that we have because of the experience we possess at the Workwell Studio, our lived experience, our realities, and also know that like this is not the only way to do this, and this is not even going to be best for all organizations. And we have that conversation. We're very upfront about like, this is what we do. If this isn't the right fit for you, we want to call that out. We don't even want to engage if we're going to, you know, perpetuate harm or disrupt systems that aren't like going to be benefited in this way. But the way that we do it is to look at the culture of the organization and determine, are we working in a mastery-based culture, or are we working in a learning-based culture? And if we're working in a mastery-based, we need to really get in and figure out, why does everybody have to be perfect all the time? Having conversations around how perfectionism is rooted in white supremacy, rooted in very toxic cultures. Like, that's just in and of itself isn't, you know, isn't going to work, isn't going to be sustainable, and has never worked. And you know, having to start from there. If we're starting from a place where there is a little bit more of like a, yeah, we've got more of a learning culture, we want to be able to develop, we want our employees to have, you know, a say in how they develop, we want to be able to like provide the tools and the resources so that they can develop how they want, and also we want to see workforce development that aligns with like our priorities, then we need to sit down and figure out, have you talked to your employees? You know, like, have you had a conversation about what they want, what they need? You know, does your performance management system include professional development, include learning and development related, you know, items in your annual like reviews? If they do, have we like aggregated that data? Have we looked at that? Have we also then gone and once it's all aggregated, we have a clear picture? Have we disaggregated that to see where it falls across different groups? Like, have we had those conversations? And if we haven't, then we need to start there. If they are like, yes, we've got a learning culture, we've done all of these things, we're still feeling like there's something missing, we're still feeling like there's a gap here where, you know, our employees aren't getting what they want, or we're not getting exactly what we need, we're seeing some discrepancies there, then I think it's time that we sit down and have a conversation around the reality of learning in our country and in our culture, and really dig into the fact that historically and currently, learning spaces are rarely safe for individuals and bodies that are marginalized, that receive oppression regularly upon them, and that these experiences as adults are carried into the learning spaces when we ask staff to engage. So what somebody experienced in high school is likely to show up again in their adult learning space. And that disrupts the power balance, that disrupts, you know, the positionality, that brings with it, you know, a long list of trauma for many of our communities and our employees. And then once we've done that, once we've constructed a traditional learning environment for our adults, they're not going to be able to engage then if they're coming to us with that reality, because they're not going to feel like I'm showing up as my 44-year-old, you know, upper management self who's ready to make some decisions and really engage. It's like, nope, this space was toxic and harmful to me. I now feel some of those same insecurities that I felt when I was 15. And so then you need to sit down and have those conversations. And as leadership, you need to be honest about those realities and understand that there may not be necessarily anything you can do to change that reality that folks have experienced. But then how are we shaping our learning spaces now? How are we shaping our learning and development activities, opportunities now, to deconstruct that harm and move away from spaces that look like that? And ideally, we would love to be able to get everybody to that place. But sometimes it's just flipping the culture from mastery to learning. And sometimes if they're learning, then we try to push them along.
I love that. And I love the work that you're doing with the Workwell Studio. And so as the founder and chief executive coach, what would you like to share with individuals or organizations that maybe you haven't had a chance to share yet to really help them understand why they should work with you?
Yeah. So the Workwell Studio is a relatively new organization. It's very exciting. We are, you know, working with organizations across a spectrum of areas and, you know, capacities, sizes, levels, all of that. We've got some very small and we've got some very big, and we've got some that are public and some that are private. But the work that we do is that we believe and are committed to workspaces that are founded in equity and justice principles. Everything we've been talking about, like, that is what we aim to do. And we look to build and sustain individual and collective development and well-being by addressing these inequitable systems. So we really look to co-create innovative opportunities for our organizations that are responsive to the needs and the desires of the employees. And so we get in and we really look to understand, you know, who is at the table and what folks are looking to do and what voices have been excluded and what groups maybe have not been appropriately responded to. And so we offer three programs: executive coaching at the individual and team level. We have a culture of well-being program, which focuses so much on everything that we've been talking about. And then we do have an integrated learning and development program, which really focuses on how to develop internally, and then what does that look like externally in our service delivery model for organizations that have that. So that's what we do at the organization level. We do some things for individuals as well.
Very nice. And I think that you've really given us a taste of what it's like to work with you. And based on the things that you're focused on, I think that really will help individuals understand why it's so important, why it's so valuable. So when you think about the key principles of what you shared in terms of systems-based and human-centered approaches, When you think about building justice work cultures, what are some key principles that you would tell individuals to keep in mind?
There are a few things. And again, I want to be very clear, this is not a comprehensive list. There is so much that comes to the table to do that work. And also, we need to make it attainable and not scary.
that's fair. And then two, you don't want to give too much, but we really want individuals to realize, mm-hmm. you know, this is why you need Michaela on your team. This is why you need her to come in and help you all identify how you do this work and do it well.
Yeah. So we prioritize 5 key principles, knowing again that it is not fully encompassing of everything. But in our experience, this is maybe a good place to start for most. Psychological safety, cultivating an open and growth-oriented, you know, workspace. Individual well-being skills, so equipping leaders and staff with tools for personal and team well-being across multiple dimensions. So looking at like my own well-being impacts your well-being, impacts their well-being, which impacts how, you know, how much work I can get done today versus how much time I'm going to spend on the phone with you trying to diffuse a situation. And also impacts how often we hear microaggressions, how often microaggressions are allowed, how often that turns into just a complacency when macroaggressions happen and nothing transpires. Anyways, sorry, moving on. There's a lot to talk about there. And then accompanying that, anti-racist practices, creating spaces that challenge and dismantle racism, discrimination, and prejudice in the workplace. Human-centered development, so placing people at the center and problem-solving and designing processes around the people first. And then bringing in our good and trusty data. So looking at how we best utilize data to inform our decision-making and identify opportunities for growth, especially when we're talking about very like shifty, shady grays, like incongruent, like it's very hard to put a pin on some of this. And the information you're going to get back, like you said, is going to be different across all realities. And so we need some of that concrete information. We need as much of that as possible to help inform decision making.
I love that. And I really just appreciate your openness and transparency. And I think you've given us a lot of things to consider from a different perspective. And I think that's starting the conversation, which is great. So again, thank you for sharing and joining to share that. And some of the questions I realized you've touched on how you work with organizations and really help them look at where they are so you can design an experience that works well for them. So mm-hmm. I feel like that covered a couple of the other questions I had, but there are 2 more that I think we probably could cover in terms of the work that you do, even outside of your organization. So I know that you are also on the Community Wellness Advisory Board, and you have the opportunity there to work on various approaches that really help individuals promote that thriving wellness across different cultures and communities. Would you like to share more about how that helps you in your role as the founder and chief executive at the Workwell Studio?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have had the pleasure of serving on a community wellness advisory board for a community that is located just outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota. And this board has been around for about 10 years, and I've been on it for several years. But with everything that has happened in the Minneapolis communities in recent years, there is a lot of work that has changed and informed the priorities of this board in a lot of unique ways. In the work that I do, I've been able to see a lot of different things that happen across a lot of different cities and communities across the country. There are like a handful that I have seen doing something similar to this. And again, it's not going to work for everybody, but I think it's so interesting and innovative the way that the manager assigned to this has taken the approach of driving a diverse stakeholder investment group across federal, state, county, local government, and community representatives to really drive home the necessity of equity and well-being and reframing how institutions from you know, the city, the school district, the county board, the, you know, local mom and pop shops that are in that community, engage with its residents in a way that is very unique and continues to like proactively and impactfully make very small. And I think that's the thing that is very interesting is this group doesn't get like federal dollars. They don't get state dollars. They're not like beholden to a funder in that capacity where they can determine what the small incremental sustainable change and growth is that they want to see for their own community. And so it's really a lot of what I think we spend a lot of time talking about in our day-to-day work is like, how do we do stakeholder engagement in a way that is empowerment and justice centered for like, for their own community. Like it's that community doing for themselves. And some of the rest of us just come in with a little bit of our knowledge, a little bit of our experience, some of our resources and say, hey, like, what do you need from me? How can I help? Let's sit down and tackle some of these issues. So like we met with a team at their school district this year who is working on a lot of their equity work, and they were able to expand. They got an equity director about 4 years ago, and he was able to hire two additional staff. That's not enough people, but it's a start. And so with their team, they're like, we're working on building relationships. We're working on how can we, you know, really get in and help the community understand, like, this is why the teachers need what they need, because this is, again, the school district. And so we sat down with them and was like, well, how would an equity impact framework help you be able to sustain and better like plan out and path out some of the work that you're doing in a way where you can integrate, you know, different voices in different ways, and it can be a little bit more manageable, and you can prioritize things, and you can have a model for internal and external and all of that. And then, you know, we get to sit down and do evaluation and analysis of community well-being work, which, I mean, somebody's got to pay the woman running this for the research, because that is just not happening in most places. But then, you know, they run a bunch of different programs and products and services that right now we're going through the redesign for the next fiscal year of like what worked well, what didn't work well, why didn't this work well? That practitioner, not a good fit, unfortunately. Okay, we need to find something else. So like, I think the thing that is most unique is, again, this isn't the county, this isn't the city, this isn't the state, this isn't the school district, this isn't like the local, like, community bureau of organizations. This is truly grassroots. And I think that that is so incredibly exciting to be a part of.
I would agree. And I just want to say, I think that it's awesome that you're doing the work that you're doing. And so when you think about envisioning the future of organizations that really prioritize individuals and collective well-being, but then also the support that you provide from a learning and development standpoint, and also the coaching that you provide to individuals, what steps would you advise individuals to get started with you and really focusing on being supported, being supportive, being more inclusive? And then, of course, any additional information that you would like to share in terms of how they get in contact with you to get the work started?
Yeah. So I think the thing that is difficult is because you and I have had these conversations, and other folks have stepped into these spaces where we're like calling on like the everyday employee. And there's a lot of power, privilege, and positionality that goes into that of like, hey, I'm not the HR director. I'm not the executive. I'm not even the director of my own team. What do you want me to do about this? And that's very real. And there's spaces where like showing up with leadership and like the HR version of this answer is very much like, we need to sit down and critically evaluate all of your procedures and your processes. Is Juneteenth just a performance for you? Do you just do pride? Like, what does this look like? Do you have, I don't know, like religious holidays that acknowledge that the months of April and June and September are going to need to have spaces for your Muslim and Islamic, you know, employees to be able to use their right as an employee, Or is it just like, well, you're going to have to take your own personal time because our holiday pay gets used in December? Like, that's the kind of like HR version of the answer that I would give. So like, just know, like, I would say, like, for folks that are listening, like, we have these conversations with leaders, we get into all of that. But I would say for most of us that don't find ourselves in those positions in our own organizations, things that we can do really go down to like, what aligns with your values and your capacity. So do you understand your why and why you're showing up for the work that you're doing? If we don't know why we're there, or our why is no longer working for us, do we have, and sometimes we don't, and this question is asked with no judgment, because we've all been there so many times, and I've been there, and I am a white human. I do not understand the reality of so many other folks. So what happens though when it's not serving us, when it's not aligning with our why? Do we have the space to be able to be reflective a little bit, to either find a way to align the little bits that we're getting that are still working so that we can stay if we have to stay, or again, if we have the privilege to find something else, taking that moment to say, hey, this served me, but I need to move on. And sometimes that's the best thing that we can do for individuals, is understanding that if I'm not in the right space for me, I am not going to be helpful to myself and my colleagues and, you know, my team. And at that point, I don't really care about the larger organizational efficiency and effectiveness. If it's not working for you, it's not working for you. And I think that the pandemic and our new generation entering the workforce is really showing some of us like, hey, you need to put yourself first, because at the end of the day, that's all you have. And so I think our work with individuals really focuses on like, how are we aligning our well-being across who we show up as an individual and as an employee together, so that there's less dissonance, there's less friction, there's less harm that happens. And if we're in a place where that's jiving for us right now and we're working and it's good, then what does it look like to step out and say, hey, you know, I'm going to do what every leadership and management book says of like, leadership isn't a title. It's like how you show up in a space. And I'm going to decide that for myself, I'm not going to continue to stand by and watch as we perpetuate harm in a certain way. Or I'm going to sit down and have a very honest conversation with, you know, a manager about how I don't really know that us focusing on our effectiveness and our efficiency is the right performance indicators for our teams. Have we thought at all about the fact that we're humans? Have we thought about how, like, if you're not doing things from an equity standpoint, you're never going to be as efficient as you could be, ever. You're just never. The research and data shows that. So I think for me, it's like kind of a come as you are kind of like potluck kind of situation, where like, if you need to get out, know that and get out. If you're in a leadership position, sit down and do some reflection and work with us, work with our team. We are looking to have HR conversations with you. We're looking to have, you know, strategic planning conversations with you. We're looking to do coaching with your leadership. If you're like, hey, I'm middle management, or I don't have anybody who reports to me, I just show up and work, but I don't really like how this is happening, reach out to us too. We do audits. We audit an organization, provide them with the feedback and the information, and they can decide what to do with it. But I think something that we're all being reminded of is like, the idea that you work for your employer is not true. Your boss should work for you. Like, you're doing all of this, and if they're doing nothing but making your life more difficult and adding to that statistic that came out that was in the New York Times a few weeks ago of like 70% of employees say that their boss has a higher impact on their mental health than their partner and their doctor, you find yourself in that situation, let's chat. Let's do something. Like, we can do something. That should not be the reality we find ourselves in. Yeah. If you share that disruptive spirit, we're here for it.
I love it. And you know what I thought about earlier when you were sharing is the work working well. So the Work Well Studio is a great title for what you do. So mm-hmm. I love it. And you know what's interesting, a different perspective, is the fact that what you just shared, that in and of itself, it shouldn't be considered disruptive, although we know that it would be But technically, it's healthy. And it's so interesting how people view conflict. Like what you said earlier, the very first example that you provided spoke volumes, because we show up oftentimes how we've been treated. And so I think that it's awesome that you're doing the work that you're doing. So to everyone listening, definitely visit theworkwellstudio.com. The link has been scrolling across your screen. Also connect with Michaela on LinkedIn. And I always like to ask this question. Is there anything that you wish I would have asked you that I didn't? That way, if there's anything else that you want to share that we didn't get to cover today that you would like to share with our listeners, so that they can connect with you and so that they can work well.
Mm-hmm. Anything I wish you would have asked. Nothing is coming to mind. I think the only thing maybe that I like left out of my last answer that I think can be important for people that are on the fence of like, okay, yeah, you're asking me to do a whole lot of like woo-woo fluffy feeling work, and I just don't have time for that. Like, this does not apply to me. This is not my priority. This is not how I see things. Like, back in the day, we didn't do that in the workplace. Like, again, that is a lived experience. That is a lived reality. That may be hard for some of us to accept, but we have to accept them all if we're going to say we're going to, or like hear them all. We don't have to accept them all, but we have to hear them all if we say we're going to hear them all. The one other thing I would say on that is there is so much research and there is so much popular media right now, like New York Times, Washington Post, Gallup, like all of these very easily accessible spaces putting out information that continues to remind us that pre-COVID and post-COVID, by not prioritizing these things in our work, we see an increase in turnover. We see a decrease in production and productivity rates. We see a decrease in organizational efficiency and effectiveness. We see, I should have pulled it. There was a number that went out like a few months ago. It was an absurd amount of money that gets spent annually in this country on sick days that would be avoided if we did basic like mental and emotional care for our like staff. So like, if this feels like something that is out of your reach or beyond your capacity or something that doesn't align with your vision, and you are a leader or you are in a position of power to make some decisions, I would maybe just ask you to think critically about all these very practical, traditional workplace outputs and organizational priorities that are directly affected by the way we treat our employees.
And you know what? That is so powerful. And I was like trying to hurry up and look for it for you. And I found the number, $227 billion per year. Is that the number that you found?
Mm-hmm. I'm pulling it up. I think I posted this just a few weeks ago too, or reposted about it. I mean,
That's a lot of
reason
money.
Enough. Like,
exactly.
Come work with us. That's reason
Show
enough.
Them the money, the money going out the door.
Exactly. Like, you know, if that's what motivates you, that's what motivates you. And, you know, we would like to spend some time, you know, reconsidering some of those priorities.
Yes. I love it. I love it. And that's the thing. Sometimes you do have to put that type of information out because it really does help individuals shift their perspective, because oftentimes we just don't know because we don't ask. So I appreciate you taking the time out to join us, to share your perspective on how organizations can thrive, but also how individuals can thrive by being themselves. And I like the fact that you highlighted that oftentimes in organizations, it's looked at as disruptive, but it really is beneficial to everyone involved. Mm-hmm. So I just want to personally thank you for joining the show. And also on behalf of our listeners who will listen to this episode, thank you for the perspective and thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me on. I've enjoyed this conversation with you.
You're welcome. And likewise, well, to our listeners, we look forward to speaking with you again soon. And remember, perspective is subjective. Have a good night. Thank you for tuning in to the Perspective View podcast. Please be sure to subscribe, like, and share the show with others. We value your feedback, so please be sure to rate the show and leave us a comment so we know how we're doing. Also, this helps us share a message with more individuals around the world regarding different experiences and perspectives.